Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 249. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about fashion and shopping and Leonardo da Vinci as we go to Milan. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have two news stories for you. The first one caught me by surprise. You can now do a vacation where you spend your time chasing tornadoes. For those of you who are doing a vacation to get away from weather, this may seem odd, but I'll put a link in the show notes to Storm Chasing Adventure Tours. And the second story is the Ryanair boss is at it again, trying to save money. This time, he's trying to get rid of all those unnecessary co-pilots. He's looking at designing planes, or at least working with companies to design planes that don't need two pilots, but only one. What could go wrong? Links to both of those stories in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Jessica Spiegel, who's coming to us from Boots and All and whygoitaly.com. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris, for having me.
And Jessica is another good friend who does a blog, as we said, on Italy. And she and I have been talking about what we could have her come on the show and talk about. And Milan is what you decided on, Jessica. Now, you love Milan, and I had an okay experience in Milan. So what did I miss?
Well, I don't even think that it's necessarily so much that you missed something. I tend to find that many of life's problems, whether they're travel related or not, come from expectations. So if you expect something to be one thing and it turns out to be the other, it may be a perfectly fine example of that other thing, but you expected it to be something completely different and that becomes a problem. And I think that's kind of the issue that happens with a lot of people with Milan. I really feel like it's an essential part of what makes up quintessential Italy now. Mm-hmm. And I think that many people who take a trip to Italy, Milan has the second busiest international airport in the country. So a lot of people end up flying in or out of Milan, whether they intend to visit Milan or not. And so If they do that, they end up tacking on a day or just spending 8 hours in the city before or after a flight. So part of it is those itineraries tend to be a little bit rushed in Milan because of that. But also, if you are just kind of tacking it on and you're doing things that are more sort of what most people think of as quintessential Italy, if you're doing, you know, some Tuscan hill town, you're seeing Venice and you're seeing Rome, then after all of that, or compared to all of that, Milan just doesn't have the same kind of wow factor for most people. It's a banking city. It's a fashion city. It's a business city. It's Italy's business city. And yet you can't have like a complete picture of Italy without what Milan brings to the table. So I think that partly it's a matter of managing expectations, and partly it's a matter of focusing on the things that do make Milan special and not just looking at how many banks there are within a stone's throw of the Duomo, for example, because that's not interesting to anybody but bankers.
Now, is there any truth to the rumor that Milan is actually not part of Italy, but part of southern Germany?
I think probably the Milanese might have an issue with that, but Italy is still remains so kind of regional that anybody outside the region probably, yes, would say that very thing.
If I go back to Milan, what should I see? What are the highlights of Milan?
I think for most people, the biggest must-see in Milan, well, there are two, really. One is the Duomo. It's the thing that looks like a wedding cake in the right, very smack dab in the middle of the city. It's white and it's covered with spires. And it's free to get in, which is cool. And the other cool thing is that you can take an elevator up and walk around on the roof, which I don't know a lot of churches that let you walk around on the roof. So that's, I think, is a very cool thing. Unfortunately, Milan is kind of a reputation for being a rather polluted city. So you don't always get to see the mountains from up on top of the roof. But if it's a good weather day, you can actually see the mountains that are surrounding the city. Another thing that tends to be really high on people's list is seeing the Last Supper, the famous Leonardo da Vinci painting on that dining hall wall in that church. And the problem with that being high on everybody's list is that, again, if people are only visiting for a day or a few hours before a flight, it can sometimes take 4 or 5 months advance booking to get your 15 minutes with Leonardo's Last Supper. So you really have to plan well in advance for that. It's only a 15-minute visit, so it's not going to take up much of your day, but the timing really has to be right. You can't just walk up and get a ticket. Aside from that, Milan is also home to La Scala, which is an incredibly famous opera house. And even if you're not into opera, they have a cool kind of opera music-related museum attached to the theater itself. And I love opera, but I'm not going to necessarily pay for a ticket to La Scala because they're expensive. But I loved going into the museum because if there's not like a dress rehearsal or something going on in the theater, as part of that tour, you get to actually poke your nose into one of those red velvet lined theater boxes that are just, they're so cool. You get to imagine that you're royalty for just a millisecond when you're there. So I think that's really fun. And the other thing, it's a personal interest of mine. I happen to just love Italian soccer, and Milan is home to my favorite team. And it is also home to the biggest soccer stadium in Italy. And so it's kind of a cathedral to soccer, and they have a cool museum there. And yeah, if it's during the soccer season, going to see a game at San Siro in Milan is something else.
Museum there focuses on the team and the team's history, or?
Yeah, the museum, it's inside the stadium. And so you get, because there's two teams that are based in Milan, the museum covers both, the history of both teams. And in both cases, they're more than 100 years old. And as part of the tour, if you pay like a couple extra euro to actually go on the stadium tour, you get to walk around in the stadium like when it's completely empty. And it's very pretty inside, actually, when it's not full of crazy people. And you get to go into the two teams' locker rooms. So you get to like sit in the chairs where the guys sit when they're getting their pep talks and everything, which was very exciting.
Thing I remember really enjoying about Milan, right next to the Duomo, is the first indoor mall.
Yeah, the Galleria. It's like a big plus sign shape, and it's kind of indoors. I mean, it's open air. The doorways are always open. They don't really close them. But yeah, there's like stores and shops inside, and there's like a Prada in there. And it's a gorgeous structure itself. There's a glass roof, glass dome at the top, and a glass roof and parts. And it gets all lit up at Christmas time. And it's very, very pretty. If you're on any kind of budget whatsoever, I would not recommend doing any shopping in there. But it's fun for people watching. Oh, and there is one thing at the very center in the Galleria that even if you're not a superstitious person, it's fun to go in and watch. The whole Galleria is, the floor is like this lovely mosaic in all four directions. And in the center, pointing toward each of the four exits, there's like a coat of arms for four different cities in that region. Milan is there, and I can't even remember the other two, but one is for Turin, which is a couple hours away, and there's a big rivalry between Milan and Turin historically. The sign for Turin on this shield is, they call it a prancing bull. He looks like he's kind of rearing up on his back legs. And the Italians are incredibly superstitious in general, and so this is one little superstition that if you go up to this shield representing Turin, you will know exactly where you're supposed to put your heel and spin around, because there's a giant hole now where this is. It's right on the bull's genitals. You're supposed to just put your heel down and spin around a couple of times, and that's supposed to be good luck for everyone but the bull, obviously.
Okay. We talked about the well-known sites. What do the guidebooks recommend that you think is kind of a waste of time?
Most of the guidebooks that I have or have flipped through that cover all of Italy give Milan such little space that, you know, they kind of cover the things. I mean, frankly, the Galleria to me is like, it's worth a walkthrough. I'm not sure it's worth, I mean, me personally, it's like, I don't know if it's worth that much more time. I know some people who think that going up to the Duomo's roof, however, is not worth their time. And I happen to love that. I've done it a couple times now. So I don't know. It really depends. Like, I get kind of glassy eyed in art galleries after a while. And the only one that I've gone to in Milan, I really did enjoy, but I went through it a lot quicker than I think most people would, was the Pinacoteca di Brera. And it is full of very lovely paintings, and it's in one of my favorite areas of the city. But yeah, I just get glazed eyes, and I need to get out and, you know, go get a coffee somewhere sooner than most people would, I think. But it does come very highly recommended in guidebooks. Oh, the Castello, that's another thing. You know, you hear the word Castello, it's castle, it sounds like it's going to be this big deal thing. It's a much more modern structure than most people, I think, are expecting, so it's a little bit disappointing. The inside of the Castello is now kind of broken up into tiny little museums, and none of them are what I would say earth-shattering.
Now, is that the Sforza fortress?
Yes. Yeah, okay. The Castello Sforzesco. It has a pretty fountain. It's not an ugly building. It's just not a cool old castle like you might think. Mm-hmm. But just behind the Castello is one of the city's lovely green spaces, the Bione, which I really like. So I usually just end up walking through the Castello grounds to get to the park in the back instead.
You talked about that something was near one of your favorite neighborhoods. What are your favorite neighborhoods in Milan?
I have a couple. The Brera is probably my favorite just because it's really charming. It is kind of narrow cobblestone streets, cafes on every corner. It's also ungodly expensive. And I mean this in terms of the shops that are there. A lot of the cafes and restaurants that are there are more likely to be overpriced. I mean, or in the same price range as the ones that have, for example, a view of the Duomo. And the apartments that are there are, I keep hearing, exceptionally gorgeous and exceptionally costly. I really like wandering around there, but it's an untouchable area for me. It's so out of reach. So the other area that I have a real soft spot for is the first one that I stayed in when I rented an apartment there. And it's called the Città Studi, which is because there's a university in that area. And it had a much more sort of neighborhood feel to me. The street that we were on happened to be one of the ones where the street markets that take over blocks upon blocks.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. That happened once a week. And that was our street. And we got to know the lady at the pasticceria down the street. We got to know the people at the corn bar. Whenever we would walk to and from like the bus stop or the grocery store or something like that, we would see the grandmothers picking up the kids from school and walking them to a nearby park with like a little jungle gym on it or something. And it seemed very much like, again, like a real quote unquote normal Italian city or normal city anywhere. I mean, it was just normal city life. You're not anywhere near really any of the attractions in Milan over there, but I just really love that area. In terms of another place that is great for visitors to make as a home base, in addition to if you can afford the Brera, more power to you. If you can't, another area that's really close to things that are fun to see and also really well connected in terms of transit is the Sempione area. So right on the other side of that park that's on the other side of the Castello, the Sempione area happens to be, it's a little more ritzy in terms of its look and the clientele, but we rented an apartment there too, and it was much more reasonable than anything in the Brera. And the Sempione area, I think it's the Corso Sempione, so this grand boulevard, is just lined with these restaurants and bars that serve aperitivo, which Milan is famous for, that kind of happy hour time when everybody goes between work and dinner or work and home, and they go have a drink and then eat at the all-you-can-eat buffets, that some of which are just frankly stunning with the amount of food you can get. So I love being over there because you have such easy access to all of those aperitivo bars.
Okay. Well, you've transitioned there a little bit into what should we eat when we're in Milan?
Milan is kind of funny because Milan, there's such international comings and goings because it's the business city. Whereas like anybody who's traveled in Italy knows that you're not going to find foreign restaurants for the most part. It's just, it's Italian, Italian, Italian places. In Milan, you will find Chinese places. I went to a Taiwanese place the last time I was there. I actually did go to a Mexican restaurant in Milan. I do not recommend doing that.
I find that's true most places in the U.S. too, though. So.
Well, yes, but I mean, in particular, I just, wow, Mexican in Italy, they have a really long way to go in that one. But, and I keep telling everybody they made a really good margarita, and they're like, well, of course they did. It's Milan. They know cocktails. They're really good at cocktails. But other than that, my husband likes to joke that if you're in Milan and you're going to a Sicilian place, that's the foreign food because it's so not their region. When it comes to like typical Milan, if there's something that is typical Milanese cuisine, one of the things that the city and the region is famous for is ossobuco. It's a meat dish. It's a beef dish that has like a bone in the center. It's good. It's like a stewed thing. They're more well known for what I would consider wintertime dishes, sort of stick to your ribs things, because Milan doesn't get a lot of snow right down in the city center, but it gets socked in by fog all winter long. So it's very damp and kind of chilly. And so you get these kind of warming foods. So ossobuco in the wintertime is a Milanese specialty. There's also a polenta that they serve a lot of places in Milan, and I can't remember the name of it right now.
A specific type of polenta?
Yeah, I want to say that it has saffron in it, which is, you know, it gives it that wonderful color. And so there are some dishes. I don't generally think of Milan as a place that you're going to go and, oh, when you go to Milan, you've got to eat X. There are some great restaurants in Milan, and it happens that my favorite gelato place in the country that I've tried so far is in Milan, but it's not so much of a food destination. There's plenty of good eats there, but it's less of a food destination to me.
Who's the most memorable person you've met in Milan?
Oh, wow. That's tough because we've made a lot of friends there. In addition to the expats that I know who live there, a couple of the people who stick out to me, one remains a friend to this day and one I never even got her name. I had always heard that like Italians are sort of not standoffish, but just because they're very, very sociable in outings, like when you go to meet them at aperitivo. But I kept hearing that it's going to be a long time before an Italian invites you into their home because that's much more sacred space to them. And we met this couple that we've been to their home. They're incredibly helpful. They've been asking us like if there's anything we can ever do for you. They invited us to their wedding. We unfortunately could not go, but it's just the warmth that they showed to us and continue to show was out of character from what I had been led to believe was sort of typical Italian and typical Milanese. So that they are very, very special. But this woman who I never knew her name, she happened to be the lady who worked at the pasticceria that was down the street from our first apartment that we rented in Milan. And I think it's partly because my husband decided that he was going to hug her when he first met her, and that caught her a little bit off guard. But then we were like best friends. And every time we went into the pasticceria, we got extra treats. And then she would come all the way out from behind the counter and hug my husband again. And like, I think she was showing off to her husband in the back, like, look, this young man wants to hug me. And it was just, it was really sweet. But again, she was so warm and so effusive. Our Italian was mediocre at best at that point, and she didn't speak English, but it was just warmth. I appreciate that so much, especially when I'm led to believe that it's going to be less than warm.
And I forgot to ask you to do it the first time. Can you define for people what a pasticceria is?
A pasticceria, what's funny about these little shops is it's like in other parts of Europe or other parts of the world where you can, yes, go to the giant market like the Safeway equivalent and get everything you need. But also there's the butcher, there's the baker, there's all of the other little shops that you can go to as well. And the pasticceria, it's a pastry shop. So they make all kind of baked goods. You're not going to find, well, it depends on the pasticceria. This is what's challenging. Some pasticceria have like gelato type things as well. They have like frozen desserts.
Oh, okay. I don't normally think that.
Yeah. And I didn't either. But then I would walk into one and go, what is that doing here? And some of them have bread, loaves of bread, but most of them, pasticceria is, I think most technically, it's like pastries and little chocolates and things like that. So it's like a sweet shop / pastry bakery shop.
Okay. And I don't normally do this, but I have a favorite story of someone I met in Milan, and I've told this on the show, but years ago, back in one of the very first episodes about learning a foreign language, and it's a similar sort of situation where I didn't speak much Italian, before I went there, I had practiced Italian for 6 to 8 months or something like that, because I knew I was going to Italy for the first time. And so I had learned Italian and been working on it. And we went to a restaurant in Milan, and it was out in, not downtown, but one of the neighborhoods. And we walked into a restaurant, and at first we thought, oh no, this is a bad sign because this restaurant is empty and it's about time to eat. And then we realized that every table was reserved. Practically. And so this was where the locals ate. Okay, no, this is actually a very good sign. This is where the locals come back and the return visits and such. And as everybody came in, they greeted Mama, they greeted Papa, you know, family-owned restaurant. Now, the two sons spoke wonderful English, so everybody in my party was ordering in English, not having any problems. And I certainly could have ordered in English, but I was just too stubborn at that point to use English. I had studied Italian, darn it. And so I ordered an Italian, and you know, we got our meal. It was a good meal. And the next night, we weren't planning on going back there. It was right near our hotel, but we were thinking, well, we tried that one. Let's go to some other restaurant. But we walked around a little, and that restaurant had a private party, and this one was closed. And we went, you know, we had a great meal last night. Let's just go back to that restaurant. So we walked into that restaurant, and Mama recognizes me. And she greets me and says, you're the one, all in Italian, you're the one who is speaking Italian. And I say, you know, I speak Italian. I just speak a little Italian. Io parlo italiano non molto bene. I don't speak it very well. But we were family. We were, you know, just, it was a very different, all the service we had the first night was very good, but like you're saying, like the woman who's coming out from behind the counter to hug your husband, there was a warmth that was added on to that because I had made the effort to learn the language.
Yeah, and I find that, I'm assuming you're going to back me up on this, I hope you will, but that's true all over Italy. If you make the effort with the language, the vast majority of the Italians are so appreciative of that. I think on some level it's because they kind of understand that learning Italian is really kind of pointless. There's very few places in the world where Italian is at all useful outside their borders, and they get it. So if you make an effort, they are extremely appreciative. If they correct you, it's because they think you want to learn and they want to help you learn. It's not because they're saying, oh, you stupid foreigner and you can't speak my language. They're so accommodating and accepting and encouraging. It is one of the things that continues to make me fall in love with the country every time I go.
There was a line from the book Eat, Pray, Love, which I've only read the first chapter from, but in the first chapter, not that I won't ever read the rest of it, but that's how far I've gotten so far. There's a line in the first chapter that, why are you learning Italian? And just in case the Italians invade Ethiopia again, it'll be useful in two countries.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So what, it's Italy, a tiny little part of Switzerland, and right. Yeah, kind of Ethiopia, but not really. It's like, no, they were crappy conquerors. So they just, you know, they didn't really get very far. So,
right.
Yeah. And like I said, I think the Italians get that. They understand that.
But one of the things I have to say is because Italian is a little more melodic, I mean, it's very, very, very similar to Spanish, but because it's a little more melodic, that it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it's actually a little easier to learn.
I think it is. I studied French before Italian, and the Italian just clicked. It just made sense. I call it a WYSIWYG language because what you see is what you get. You pronounce all the letters. That's just the rule, with very, very few exceptions. And yes, like you said, it is beautiful to listen to. It just feels good to say. There's so many appealing things about the Italian language, both to listen to and to speak, in terms of it being easier, I think, to learn than many other languages. Yeah.
And we plugged your site, but actually I'm going to take the opportunity to plug your podcast, which is This Week in Italy, where you can learn at least one new Italian phrase a week and then also get caught up on all things Italian for those of you who are Italophiles.
It's actually Eye on Italy. We toyed
Eye on
with
Italy.
This Week in Italy.
That's right.
We toyed with This Week in Italy, but we thought, well, if we ever don't get to a weekly recording, that would be bad. So,
and of course, in true Italian fashion, you took August off. So
exactly. So it's very good that we did not call ourselves This Week in Italy. But yeah, it is fun. My co-hosts both live in Italy, and so they usually come up with the Italian phrase of the week. And yeah, I've actually learned a few. There have been a couple that they've brought up that I had never heard before.
So I'd like you to think of a picture of something you saw in Milan, some scene. You're sitting there, you watch this happen, and you laugh to yourself and say, only in Milan.
Oh, okay. So walking through the Galleria once, we had just stopped at a lovely gelateria, and we were walking through the Galleria, and we noticed this crowd gathering outside the Prada store. And I'm kind of looking at my husband. We're looking at each other. I'm like, I don't know. What is this? Well, let's kind of walk around and see if we can see something. And I saw the people before I saw the giant movie cameras on the other side of the people. But Antonio Banderas and Liam Neeson walked by, you know, in character into the store. And all of a sudden it fell into place because just the day before we'd been walking by the Duomo and I'd said, wow, that looked like Laura Linney. Oh, no, couldn't be. And then it turned out, of course, that it was Laura Linney, Liam Neeson and Antonio Banderas filming a movie that the name escapes me, but it came out last year. And this is, again, 2 days after there was another moment where we're walking by some cafe and I'm like, wow, that guy looks just like Lenny Kravitz. And my husband's like, no, can't be Lenny Kravitz. And then, of course, it was because he was performing somewhere nearby the next day. So I think what's funny about Milan is that this was all sort of taken in stride. I mean, aside from the crowd outside the Prada store, I think it was the cameras that were drawing the crowd. If Antonio Banderas and Liam Neeson had just been walking around like Laura Linney was the day before, or Lenny Kravitz sitting in his cafe, nobody would have bothered them. They might have looked twice, but it would have been like, eh, yeah, I guess that happens here. Because, you know, the fashion houses are there. They get a lot of famous people. So coming from Portland, Oregon, where we just don't have a lot of famous people, it was like, that's hilarious. Nobody seems to care. That would be a big deal to me if Antonio Banderas was walking around in my city. But
and I should ask you, because this is something we missed. I went there with my daughter, and we didn't know where we could get a glimpse of that fashion industry, which we know is Milan.
There are, I mean, it depends on what you mean by fashion industry. I think fun things to do is go walk down like that main street where like all the flagship stores are, maybe not flagship stores, but where you're going to find the Armani and the Prada and the Dolce & Gabbana and all of those big fancy stores where the fancy people shop. Window shopping there is great because the window displays are lovely and watching the people is fabulous. These women who, you know, they're dropping thousands and thousands of euro in every single shop, and they're carrying their bags and, you know, with their glasses on. And so that's fun to go see, but I don't know anybody who can shop there. So that's fun for, like, you get that end of the fashion world that is Milan. I have yet to visit them, but there are fashion, I guess I'm kind of going to call them outlet stores. They're like the discount shops in Milan. And what happens is it's like last season's looks. So you can get enormous discounts on them. You might still be paying a couple hundred euro for a jacket, but when it was 1,000 euro to begin with, it's an enormous discount. So they're more tucked away. They are definitely not well advertised or well signposted or really for tourists at all. There are books that specialize completely in shopping in Milan, and they're all listed there. But that's sort of another aspect of the fashion industry in Milan, because not everybody in Milan is spending that copious amounts of money in the flagship stores, but everybody in Milan looks like they do. So
yeah. Milan is, to me, a comfortable city. Mm-hmm. I don't feel very far from home, I would say, most of the time. Is there any moments in Milan you can think of that you thought, this doesn't feel at all like home? Like Portland.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to my addiction to Italian soccer, I've been to games at the San Siro, I want to say 5 or 6 times now, and 2 of them were sellouts. And this is a stadium that can hold, I want to say, 85,000 people. And the feeling faded pretty quickly because I got into the game and you kind of just get to the point where you're like, well, all right, the event itself and the language that's being spoken is a little bit different than what you might have at home, but it's the same kind of passion that sport fans have of any sport anywhere in the world. It's just that there's something a little otherworldly about going to an Italian soccer match or probably an English soccer match or any of those where it's a religion. I joke that the San Siro is like a cathedral, but it's not really a joke. It's like there's just a little bit more of an energy that has an edge. That I go to the soccer games here in Portland and it is nothing like that. So that's definitely a moment where you kind of look around and you go, I am not in Kansas anymore.
As we go to start to wind this down, when you go to Milan, one thing you should know and one thing you should pack before you go to Milan.
Well, the one thing you should pack, especially if you're going at any time of year other than winter, is like one of those little Chinese fans, a little hand fan. because it's freaking muggy there. I was there 1 year in like mid-May and it was like 98 degrees and felt like 1,000 degrees of humidity. I mean, it was just so hot and humid that, yeah, the little fan was lovely, especially on the metro. That was really handy. So I like the little fan. Other than that, for Milan, they don't get a ton of tourists, but a lot of the tourists they get are kind of fashion tourists. So I would say basic black. Go with basic black for Milan.
So we should leave home the I'm with stupid t-shirt.
Yeah, I would skip that. Unless, you know, then maybe. I don't know. One thing you should know, I think I'm going to go back to my thing about expectations. If you know what to expect from Milan, if you know what you can expect to get out of Milan, you run much less of a risk of being disappointed by Milan. It may not be your favorite city in Italy. I don't think Milan is for everybody. I don't even recommend people go there on a short 2-week trip. But if you are going to go, if you are going to take the time, I think be very aware of what to expect before you go so that you do get more out of it and you do have a more enjoyable time.
As I think back about our trip to Milan, which was done on a trip to Rome and Venice and all of these very spectacular cities, we didn't talk about it that much when we got back. But as I think back on it, I did enjoy our time there. So it is interesting that my time has colored my perception of Milan to someone. I have two more questions. Do you have anything else that we should know before I ask my last two questions?
One thing that I would mention that I haven't, there's another neighborhood that I have neglected to mention that is kind of a fun aspect of Milan that not a lot of people know, that Milan has canals. It's not like a canal city in the same way that Venice is, certainly, but there are two canals, one of which was actually based on a design by Leonardo da Vinci, who lived in the city for quite a while. So there's one neighborhood that's south of the city center that's called the Navigli, and it has these two big canals. There's not really anything, you know, you can't go on a gondola ride on them. There are occasionally boat rides in the high season, but it used to be like a really kind of rundown artsy district in that that's where the artists lived because it was cheap. And now it's where funky art galleries and restaurants are, and the artists can no longer afford to live there. So it's still a little funky, and there are some really great restaurants and, again, some fun art galleries down there. But it's just fun to see these giant canals in the middle of a city that you really are not expecting them.
Last two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Milan when what?
When you are sitting in a crowded aperitivo bar surrounded by all of the Milanese who they never seem to leave. They just set up shop at a table and they hang out with their friends and more friends arrive. And it's just busy and bustling from the minute that they get out of work until, frankly, I leave, because they're there what seems like all night long, even on a weeknight. Aperitivo is just so quintessentially Milan to me. And I love those evenings.
If you had to describe Milan in three words, what three words would you use?
I actually, because I listen to the show, I know this question, and I was really struggling with it, and then I thought, no, of course, it's obvious. Milan is la bella figura, which is a saying in Italian that it has two meanings. It can mean literally like looking good.
Okay, looking
right.
good.
So that's the literal. But the other kind of meaning that goes with it is behaving in the right way. And it doesn't mean just like sitting at the table and practicing good etiquette. It means carrying yourself well. It means presenting a good figure. So that's Milan. That's what Milan is all about, is la bella figura.
Excellent. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show. Finally, I'm glad we've got a chance to do this. And remember to check out Jessica at whygoitaly.com, bootsandall.com, and I on Italy podcast. Jessica, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much. It was great to talk to you.
One quick correction that Jessica sent. Just as soon as she hung up with me, she realized that when she had talked about polenta with saffron, she really meant risotto, and she wanted to make sure that you understood that she does know the difference. In news from the community, I got an email today from Wade who said, "I greatly enjoy your show. I have traveled to 35 different countries and 5 continents, about a year out of the U.S. for vacation, if all tallied up. Everything from several month-long trips to quick 4-day jumps, such as to Machu Picchu. I greatly enjoy your show. You and your guests are, like me, bitten by the travel bug. I appreciate hearing about new places. When you have a guest on that has traveled to places where I have been, I will sometimes close my eyes and remember the places they are describing. Very fond memories indeed. I can often hear how you tend to get excited over new places. I greatly enjoy it. And you're right, Wade. I think, close my eyes and think about the places, like this week, for instance, thinking about Milan and my trip there. And then, yes, I get very excited at learning about places that I have never been. I work on the road with large amounts of time in the car, and your podcasts make the time fly by. I have recommended your show to several of my friends, and they love it. I have not been able to travel much since a job change a few years ago, but I'm heading to Europe this fall. My first trip in way too long. I'm taking a special friend on her first trip out of the country, and she is excited. She has been listening to your podcast since I introduced her to it. Thank you so much for all you do. Please keep it up. And Wade, thanks so much for sharing the show. Obviously, since the show has gone non-commercial again, I don't have a lot of budget to do advertising for the show. And so you and those of you who are listening to the show are my advertising. And so thank you when you remember to tell your friends about the Amateur Traveler. And I also heard from Daryl. Daryl said, "Hey, Chris, nice episode on Toronto. Since my wife is from there, I have been there at least 10 times. I was laughing at the part about her getting lost on the PATH system. My wife probably thinks the same thing. For those who really want to get around it, you can get maps for the PATH system. Like your guest says, there are tons of festivals there. My favorite is probably Caribana, the largest or second largest Caribbean festival, debate with the one in Brooklyn on Labor Day in North America, which happens the first week in August. And I haven't been to it, but my wife raves about the Beaches Jazz Festival on the eastern side of town, which happens in July." Thanks so much for that tip, Daryl. I think with that, we're probably going to bring this show to a close. I'm getting up tomorrow early to go over to PodCamp Boston. I've never been, and so I'm excited to go there as long as I happen to be in town. I am, as I said, still in Boston. The meetup we were hoping to get together this week didn't work. I'm currently hoping that maybe the weekend of October 31st, so let me know if you're going to be around Boston in that time. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Remember, you can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.